And the bottom of the hour on a Wednesday means it's time for our Vents Day segment, your weekly chance to vent your spleen politely on topics in the news here on the Jefferson Exchange. Earthquake preps and revitalizing rural areas, the topics this week. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org or post up on Facebook. Let's start on the earthquake prep story. It took an article in the New Yorker to bring the chance of a big earthquake on the opposite side of the country to the forefront once again. But it's not like people in our region were unaware of the dangers. Preparation for a big Cascadia subduction zone earthquake, that's another issue in which you can vent about today. The Oregon legislature left the state capitol nearly a month ago without passing a proposal for several million dollars to make the capitol itself safe in an earthquake, which means a big quake could take out a bunch of the state's political leaders at one time. That points to the heart of the question here. How is money best spent to prepare for an earthquake? Keeping state legislators and the governor safe, or putting seismic retrofits into schools all over the state? They did that. Into earthquake food and water kits? Into early warning systems? Tell us how you have prepared for earthquake in your own life and home, if at all. And outside of your home and neighborhood, how should we as a society be getting ready for a big earthquake? 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Item two is about our rural areas, and in this region there are lots of those. We've talked about issues with hard-pressed counties like Josephine and Curry, which can barely afford to provide county services to their citizens, like the libraries in Josephine County, now run by a nonprofit organization. The bigger issue is the loss of people and money in rural areas. A generation ago, about a quarter of the United States population lived outside metro areas. Now the figure is under 20%. We often talk about how rural areas could use some help, so here's your chance to sound off on what that help should be. What kind of assistance might bring people and money and vitality back to rural areas? Who should provide it? Should it be up by the bootstraps, you folks in the rural areas take care of yourselves, or should the states kick in? So let's go first to Mike in Eagle Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
Whenever the subject of earthquake preparedness comes up, I feel compelled to join the discussion because my hometown is Anchorage, Alaska, and I was 17 at the time that we suffered a 9.2 earthquake, which is best remembered down here for the tsunami that it created in Crescent City.
Right. Oh, that's true. That's right. The Crescent City tsunami was caused by the Alaskan earthquake, yes.
And I think the lesson from that is that, you know, you lose all your utilities and all your transportation, you know, electricity, gas, water, sewer, all goes out. Roads go out. Railroads go out. Airports are gone. Seaports are gone. And you really have to be self-sufficient. I think the Oregon Office of Emergency Management is talking, advising residents to be prepared to be self-sufficient for up to 2 weeks now because you're just not going to be any way to resupply. I think that problem is worse now than it has been in times past because of the just-in-time restocking policy that retail establishments have adopted. So there's no back room. There's no warehouse. You know, if you go into a supermarket, what they have is what's on the shelves. And, you know, they're not going to be able to restock those shelves for who knows how long. So it behooves us all to have all the food and the water that we're going to need for, I'd say, a minimum of 2 weeks. Have some basic first aid knowledge and first aid supplies on hand. If you have people in your household that are in need of medication, make sure that there's a backup supply of that to be drawn on, and just make sure you can take care of yourself for a while because help is going to be slow to show up.
Mike, what do you remember most about that earthquake in Anchorage in 1964? What was the biggest need that went on for the longest time?
I think, of course, I was only 17, so I wasn't driving a whole lot, but I think that probably fuel was fuel and food supplies, you know, were in short supply. You know, I, like a lot of Alaskans, we had a freezer full of moose meat and fish and other things, so that was probably not as much a pressing need as fuel was. Again, you know, that's only an issue if you can get out of your house. You know, one thing I noticed where I live, you know, I can't get more than a mile before I have to cross a bridge over an irrigation a ditch.
Right,
if that bridge goes out, then I'm going to be stuck. So I think just having, you know, food and water and any kind of medication that your family is going to need. What are you going to do about sanitary systems if your sewer lines are out?
Mm-hmm. Okay, all kinds of things to think about, and you certainly have given us a chance to think about this in a first-person sense from your own experience. Mike, thanks for that. Appreciate it. This is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange. We're looking for your polite ventings on earthquake preparation. What we should be doing either as individuals or as a society, where should we be spending money to get ready for earthquakes through government budgets? What should we be doing at our own homes? That's one topic. The other one is, how do we revitalize rural areas? Much has been said about the decline in rural areas, the decline in population, the decline in vitality. How do we pump some life back into rural areas? Is that a responsibility just of the rural areas themselves, or is there a benefit to all of us? Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org or go to our Facebook page and go to the second item there where it says Vents Day, August 5th, and post a comment there. Becca in Elmira emails on the rural issue. She says, my dream is to see semi-rural areas full of small family farms or co-ops. These would be small communities with resource sharing, work sharing like barn raising, granges for local information, music, art. Not sure just how these would be economically viable or how land purchase would be accomplished. Just seems like a great idea. That from Becca in Elmira. Let's get your thoughts as well. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Ryan and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Well, good morning, Jeffrey. Actually, I really like both those comments. I think that sort of getting at some better sense of rural communities and what rural provides for Oregon, because, you know, those of us who live in urban areas, of course, eat food and depend on materials and transportation and a lot of other things that are provided by the rural side of things.
But we are tied together.
Really, you know, I liked Mike's comment. I was just in Anchorage. I was born in Anchorage, actually, but I'd missed the quake. We left beforehand. And, you know, and Anchorage was uniquely resilient. And as we're starting to think about earthquake preparation, especially, you know, what's going to happen when the 9-0 quake hits the coast, we need to stop thinking about being resistant to it, and we need to start rethinking and learning from the Japanese about being resilient. What does that mean? And actually, I think there's really powerful lessons in rural communities about resiliency. You know, the interdependency is maybe clearer or something, you know, because it isn't going to be 2 weeks without food, you know. They're talking about maybe clearing out some transportation corridors through the coast range, and you know, and the Japanese did this amazingly well. I mean, I remember after the tsunami, and as horrible as that was, there was this picture of this woman riding her bicycle down a road where there was 6 to 8, 10, 12 foot tall piles of trash, but the road was clear. And she was able to walk, and people were able to get vehicles in, emergency vehicles, within 24 hours. And their capacity to do that was because they had staged outside of various earthquake zones heavy equipment. They had staged water resources. They had staged sanitation resources. We have nothing like that. I mean, the National Guard is the closest thing we have to sort of the institutional heavy equipment resource. But we haven't even considered of what this is going to look like for every one of the communities, because Newport's going to be disconnected from everybody for perhaps months. So where are the barges, you know, in the Puget Sound who are ready to come and serve Newport, who are ready with fuel oil and cooking and materials and all of the rest? We haven't done it. We just don't as a culture deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We like to armor up, and again, the Japanese, you know, they built that massive seawall, and it didn't work. You know, so I think we need to change a mindset in both cases in terms of rural resiliency and what does it have to offer and fostering that. And then coming from that, the message of what we're all going to need as a community, you know, to deal with this, what will be probably the biggest natural disaster in the history of our country.
It sure sounds like it, the way people talk about it. And thanks for that, Ryan. Good job in tying the two together. We're talking interconnectedness. The fact is that we're not going to just survive as individuals. I certainly hope it's not like that, where we're competing for resources, family versus family, should the big earthquake hit, which is widely believed to happen. The general cycle is 243 years. It's been 315 since the last one. It was in 1700 along the Cascadia subduction zone. So we're due, is the general view of the folks who know the way the earth moves. The bigger issue, when we talk about interdependency and the way we depend on each other, not only in the earthquake, but also in rural areas, is, you know, can we do things in our neighborhood? For example, would the folks in the house on the corner be the ones who stockpile the water? Would the folks in the house next door stockpile the food? You know, would the other people make sure that they keep supplies of blankets and warming implementations and implements and all that sort of thing? So, you know, all ways to think about this, but it's a good way, good point that Ryan brought in to tie those together. We do talk about interdependency, and that's how you revitalize rural areas, and certainly how you get past the worst days of an earthquake once the worst of the damage has happened. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange on this Vents Day. Let's hear your thoughts on what we should be doing for earthquake preps, either as individuals or as a society, and how we revitalize rural areas. It's been a topic of discussion in several parts of the country of late. Always a topic of discussion in Oregon, for sure, as we talk about places that were once very dependent on resources like timber that have now come to very low days economically, even especially in their county budgets. Join us at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go to John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, the really good points made here. The on-time supply lines for the country, that is a huge one. The way things have evolved, everything is twitch muscle quick, but it's also turned off that quick. I remember the Columbus Day storm. Chainsaws ran day and night for over 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Everything was shut down. I remember the 64 flood. Bridges gone everywhere. Huge virgin timber root balls clogging up things. Bridges tore out, roads down for a long, long time. The Alaska quake, I remember when the tsunami come down, I had relatives down in Eureka, Crescent City area, but I lived in Florence at the time, lifted the dock up and over the pilings.
Wow.
Right down in Old Town there.
Huh.
Yeah, when they talk about the Northwest being benign, it is until it isn't. But we got a bigger thing that's kind of an extension to this, and that's our electric grid. Our electric grid in this country and a lot of the world, but let's worry about us first, is feeble, and it's just totally vulnerable, not just to the EMP thing, but just the arcing or the domino type thing that can happen. It's outdated. The money has not been used to keep it up, just like the roads and the bridges. So really, this is a broader topic, but I really, really appreciate it. It's a good one, Jeff. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate hearing from you, John. So we're talking about earthquake preparedness and revitalizing rural areas on the Jefferson Exchange. Obviously, some overlap between those two, as we've discovered from previous calls. Let's hear your voice on this. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org, or go to our Facebook page. Find the second posting there called Vents Day, August 5th, and just hit the comment section there. Mike in Medford emails, the rural state of Jefferson seems to have similar problems regardless of community size. Connectivity and city cooperation are severely lacking. What if we connected all the counties and municipalities, streamlining into one police service, medical, fire, and public transportation geared toward our extremely disconnected region? A coordinated tourism site with every guide and outdoor service you would ever need to find. We live in arguably the most beautiful part of the planet. Let's respect it and use it to everyone's advantage. That's an interesting one to talk about in terms of rural communities and what we would do. And this obviously works for earthquake preparations as well. A coordinated system where you're not dealing with the Ashland Police or the Talent Police or the Phoenix Police or the Medford Police. We're talking four straight towns, four police departments, county sheriff on top of that. Is it necessary for us to have all these services? Should we be looking at consolidations, among other things, to provide services more efficiently now when things are good and in the case of a disaster? And, of course, we're talking about the Cascadia subduction zone quake. Let's get your thoughts. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org, or on Facebook. Here's Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Yes, good morning. Relating specifically to very active people that lived for generations out in the hinterlands, more and more their children are trying to get them to move into town because of an emergency, no public transportation, not even other than sheer emergency transportation. There are a lot of people who are very vital, especially working with each other in small groups that are all, you know, generations of learning how to take care of each other, take care of the land, take care of little businesses, machinery and everything, but there's no transportation. That kind of is the key to the whole thing. In disasters like earthquakes, floods, and everything, what brings everything to a screeching halt is when something is kaput, dam, power grid, whatever, is transportation to get people there to repair the stuff. And that's, we need some way to figure out how to move people around for their own needs, pleasurable needs, and in disasters.
So a more robust public transportation system, Jim? Is
well, yeah, something. So there's always alternate systems, alternate ways to get to someplace, alternate, and have all that mapped out. There's a lot of back roads back around the fallen bridges over irrigation ditches and stuff. But a lot of people don't realize really where they are, even though they've lived out there for, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good point. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. And, you know, the point you raise is well taken, because I can remember a time when there was a landslide, for example, on 101 between Gold Beach and Brookings. And so you had to travel from Brookings to Gold Beach via Carpenterville Road, which is way up in the hills, and some great views up there. But boy, is that a windy, twisty road. It's one of those Dramamine drives. But this is the kind of situation we're faced with should the earthquake come and be as robust as it is supposed to be, a 9-0 earthquake along the Cascadia subduction zone. This is what the New Yorker talked about. I don't know why it took an article in the New Yorker, of all things, to convince people in the Pacific Northwest that, hey, you know, this could be a real problem. We're talking about a zone that stretches from Cape Mendocino up to British Columbia, highly prone to very violent earthquakes in a period of about 300 to 500 years. It's been 240, well, it's a 243-year average, and it's been, again, 315 years since the last break on the Cascadia subduction zone. How do we prepare? That's the basic question here. How do we prepare for earthquakes? How do we prepare as individuals? What, if anything, have you done so far? What more should we be doing that we haven't done already as governments, as collectives of people? And then our other issue is rural areas and how we revitalize those. And obviously there's some crossover here, because a lot of our area is rural, and we're talking about trying to get ready for not just earthquakes, but also just how to get through daily life. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org, or go to Facebook and place a post where it says Vince Day, August 5th. Let's go to Bill in Arcata. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Thank you, Jeff. It strikes me that a futurism is almost antagonistic or even punitive toward occupying rural places. They're talking about cities growing up instead of out. They're talking about the high cost of living in rural places as compared to the low cost of living in cities, that it's much easier to get around on a bicycle in the city than it is if you have to pedal 6 miles down a narrow country road. And it strikes me that we're talking about futurism is talking about a vacant country, and the difficulty of living in rural areas and occupying them is almost multiplied by city planning.
In the sense that it keeps the cities compact and tight? I mean, but you're talking about sprawl in the other way, aren't you? If cities grow out and not up?
Yeah, but the solution is raise the gas tax so that people will want to move into the city. And in the end, we have a vacant country with a few cities dotted here and there. And I'm not suggesting that cities should sprawl, but we need a different vision of the future if we're going to have people living in rural areas, which we need if we're not going to have a vacant country.
All right. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate that. And that raises a question about what the approach should be. I mean, is it okay with you, for example, that we seem to have people moving out of our rural areas in droves, that the percentage of people who live in rural areas has slid from about 26% in the early 80s to around 19% today? Is it okay with you that we believe open quarters? I mean, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a future in which you have vibrant communities and lots of people hanging around and you don't want to live in a city, then you probably want a few more people in the rural areas. If you're thinking about things like the rewilding of America, then your view would probably be different. Let's hear yours. 800-838-3760 by phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email, or post up on our Facebook page. The Oregonian dealt with this week in an editorial about other states explore ways to boost rural growth. This is part of the Oregonian's editorial agenda. And it reads in part, other state governments have taken a more proactive approach than Oregon to try to stabilize rural areas. South Dakota, Idaho, and Wyoming are among rural states that have launched marketing programs to try to convince young people to return. Arkansas has a Department of Rural Services, which oversees programs dedicated to everything from rural economic development to rural health. Minnesota launched the Intelligent Rural Communities Initiative in 2009 with the goal of helping rural areas keep pace technologically and economically in an increasingly technology-driven economy. In 2012, the University of Nebraska created the Rural Futures Institute with similar goals. North Carolina, Illinois, Indiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina are collaborating on the Rural Innovative Schools Initiative. These are just a few of the more ambitious efforts across the country. It's possible that none of the initiatives will significantly alter the demographic trajectory of rural areas. But at the very least, those states are more likely to improve the living conditions of current rural residents than states like Oregon, whose governments have been reluctant to commit significant time and resources to non-urban areas. Again, this part of an editorial in the Oregonian on Sunday. Which concludes, it's not an accident that some of the states with the most aggressive rural development initiatives lack major metropolitan areas. There's a reason Nebraska works so well, says Craig Smith, the executive director of Rural Development Initiatives. There isn't as much polarization. Before Oregon's rural areas can make real progress, the state must move past the political polarization that was evident in the 2015 legislative session and reestablish bridges between urban and rural areas. Those ties must go beyond farmers markets, the only window some urban dwellers have into rural living. As Oregon Agriculture Department Director Katie Koba pointed out at a recent public meeting in Portland, people living in Oregon can't consume everything Oregon farmers grow. The necessity of getting products to market makes the loss of container shipping at the Port of Portland as disruptive in rural Oregon as in the Portland metro area. But perhaps the port woes also will remind some urban residents, including Portland area legislators, that the entire state still is interconnected in many ways. Like other states, Oregon needs to create a framework to comprehensively look at those connections and see what must improve to make the entire state, rural counties included, work better. A lot going on in the world, maybe a little less in Oregon, in the opinion of the Oregonian Editorial Board, in terms of trying to get attention focused on rural areas and how to make them vibrant once again. And even this editorial points out it's going to take more than just cutting down more trees again to get rural areas back in business. We can talk at a future time about this once again. Thanks for joining us for Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange.